Okay. All right, Earl, do you want to do like an intro?
Sure.
We're here with...
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the Sports Parent Podcast, where we talk about sports and parenting and the intersection between sports and parenting, hosted by best-selling author Jeff Pearlman.
And Catherine Pearlman, also known as the Family Coach.
On this week's podcast, we're going to talk about China and funerals and metal detectors.
What about Chinese funerals?
No, and even a child molester.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. And our guest this week is interesting. First time we've had a non-sports person as our guest. It's Shelley Wright, the famed country singer who sold more than 1.5 million albums in her career, came out of the closet in 2010, and raises her two sons with her spouse, Lauren, in New York.
So I think it's kind of funny. You just said she came out of the closet, and we talked to her while we were in our closet.
And we're in the closet right now. Yeah. So we have not come out of the closet.
No, not yet.
Before we begin the show, we're sponsored by B2 Design. They take pride in planning, strategizing, and organizing your online content to make your message clear and concise. B2 Design works with clients of all sizes. The Family Coach uses B2 Design to create her website and logo. How you feeling about it?
Still love it.
And my website was also designed by B2 Design. Your thoughts?
Still love it.
For more information on building a beautiful new website or updating an old one, get in touch with Brant Beaupre at brant@b2twodesign.net. Now, this is the second week in a row where I dug out of the closet an old article for us to talk about. And you have no idea what it's about. Would that be correct?
That's correct.
Here's the headline. First of all, it's from the Tucson Daily Citizen, December 17th, 1964. Teacher's remark stirs Hunter to act. Here's a lead story by Bill Davidson. Because a teacher called his daughter a, quote, savage for liking to hunt, Lester P. Stewart is out to ensure hunting gets a fair share from teachers all over Arizona. The former president of the Wildlife Unlimited said yesterday he is meeting in January with Tucson area high school and junior high school biology teachers in an effort to induce them to teach the valid side of hunting. So, Family Coach, do you believe in teaching the valid side of hunting?
Well, I totally do. I have to say, living, you know, in a place where it's overrun by deers or bear or other animals, just on that fact alone, I think people want to hunt for sport, want to hunt for food. I have no problem with that. However, I do have an issue about gun safety, and I do believe that there is no safe gun in the house. There's been a lot of reports about people, you know, you have to teach your kids from a young age to be careful with guns. And, you know, if you teach them a proper safety, they know how to handle a gun. They don't use guns when they're not supposed to, so on and so forth. But there's so many stories time after time where kids have been raised that way, even around hunting and guns all their lives, and still an accident happens. So I have an issue there, but I'm all for hunting.
Would you call a kid a savage who hunts? Because that's what the teacher in 1964 said.
No, well, I'm all for not calling kids names, period.
But savage is kind of could be a cute, fuzzy nickname.
I don't think so.
Oh,
but
savage.
I don't think there's anything wrong with hunting, and I think that was, that's not such a great teaching.
The funny thing is, we've talked about this before. I used to say for a story or something, I would go on a hunting trip, and I would shoot whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, you can never do that.
I could never do it. I am fine with other people doing it, but there's absolutely no way. I think of like that my cousin Vinny. And when, what's her name, the woman in the...
Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei, she bangs her foot against the floor and she talks about the doe-eyed deer. And there's no way I could look at a deer and shoot him. But I respect other people that do, and I have no problem with it as sport.
Okay, fair enough.
All right then. So what's up this week, Jeffy?
So this is a heavy one for us. We were in New York last week, returning home, and we were there for a day. Well, it was just a trip to see family when we found out that your Aunt Barbara had died suddenly. And I actually don't want to hijack this. I was thinking if you, for 2 seconds, you know, a minute or two, give us a little rundown about your Aunt Barbara, who obviously it's your dad's sister, older sister, who passed at the age of 74, who you knew for your entire life.
Yeah, well, we lived in the same town as my Aunt Barbara till we moved to California, and we often saw her. She's just a very giving person. As I said at her funeral, she would never say no. She might complain about why she couldn't do something, but she would do it anyway. She would invite any number of people to her house. If it was crowded, she didn't care. You had a friend that could also come, she would let them come. And she was a great cook. She made us all kinds of tasty treats. including the spice nuts that we talked about. Oh no, we went on the radio and you talked about it with
Kyle Brandt.
Yeah, Kyle Brandt on his podcast. So anyway, she was a lovely lady and she was in our kids' lives. Mm-hmm. And so it was sad for everybody when she passed away suddenly.
It was actually interesting because we talked about how to tell the kids that she died. And she was in our kids' lives. It wasn't like they saw her all the time. They probably saw Aunt Barbara 4 or 5 times a year, you know, maybe 6 times a year. And our kids are still young enough. So we debated how to tell them, and I ended up telling them, and I really braced for something. And I told them, you know, Aunt Barbara died last night, and I was really choked up about it, as were you, obviously. And the kids were kind of like, okay, you know, can we go play video games now? And I wonder, you've done this a lot. You've dealt with this stuff a lot. Is that pretty common, or should I? Because I was a little taken aback. I was like, aren't you guys sad? Aren't you disappointed? And they were just kind of like, all right. What's next?
I think their reaction and your reaction are very, very common. Kids don't understand death in the same way that we do. We understand that that person is no longer here and is in the ground buried and we will never see them or speak to them again. It takes kids a period of time to come to that realization. It doesn't just necessarily hit them right away. Over time, they understand what death means. So I think that's very common. And also kids grieve in very, very different ways. There's no one way to grieve. Some kids are hysterical and then move on. Some kids are absolutely fine and get hysterical later. And interestingly, our son, we decided to bring them to the funeral and we brought them to the gravesite.
Jews do this very quickly, just if you don't know. You know, Jews take care of this all very quickly. She died. We had the funeral shortly thereafter. And anyway.
Yeah, and many people believe that, you know, there's no place at a funeral for children. And especially at the gravesite. But to me, I think it's really important that kids don't fear death. It is a part of life and people do die. It's not something that we should fear. It's something that's sad and we should feel that emotion. But I don't think we do our kids any favor from shielding them from our own grief on some level and letting them see, you know, the cycle of life. So we brought our kids to the gravesite. And interestingly, our son broke down in hysterics at the ceremony. And, you know, maybe it didn't hit him during your conversation, but at the moment she was actually being buried, it hit him. And he had his moment and he cried and so did I. And we walked away and we moved on, you know. And I think that that was an important experience for them.
The only point where I thought, I don't know about this, actually was when he cried. And it was, you know, you're at the gravesite. And it's very intense, and it's very real, and it's very raw. And I've said this before. I think I've probably written this, but to me, there's no sound that's as jarring as dirt hitting the top of a coffin. You know, and I don't know if it's just a Jewish thing or whatever, but the ritual is you take turns putting some dirt on the coffin.
But I actually liked what the rabbi said, in that in our case, in the Jewish case, they do it because it's, even though it's sad, it's better that that action has happened by a loved one rather than the gravediggers. So family members and friends take part in that.
I just think it's a very, very raw, painful, kind of scary. I know we're supposed to make death not scary, but there is something about knowing that there's a body who you knew in this casket and everyone's putting dirt on the person and letting that person go. And I wonder, for our son's only 9 years old, if it might be too much for him and lead to a little bit of trauma is an exaggeration, but nightmares, scare? No, you disagree? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, it wasn't gruesome. It's not like he saw a body or anything like that. And for me, it was more just, rather than him wonder what happens at a funeral or wonder what happens to the body, like he could see what happened and that it was a beautiful place and that there'll be a headstone and that people will be able to visit. I think was important step. I think it's sometimes the imagination is worse than the reality.
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, just like a really good person who we lost, and both of us are really sad. On a different note, Catherine, you would like to talk about a woman you met and kind of actually dumped me for on the airplane on the flight back from New York.
I don't see how I could have dumped you when you were on a nice aisle seat and I was in the middle seat in a different section of the plane.
That's one way. That's a selective way of looking at it.
Yeah, you could have had my middle seat. Well, anyway, on the way home from New York, I sat next to this woman from China, and she was traveling with her husband and daughter, who was 11 years old, and she works as a teacher. So we were kind of having a little cultural conversation about life in America, life in China, about school, about religion. And it was actually great because it was this just natural cross-cultural moment where we both, I think, learned a lot about each other's culture. And I had a couple of takeaways I thought we could talk about. So this woman works as a teacher, and she works full-time, so does her husband. And her mother-in-law lives with her, as is often the tradition in China. And she cooks, she cleans, she does all the laundry, she does absolutely everything in the house. And if the woman who sat next to me tries to do any of that stuff, she gets belittled by her mother-in-law, and that's her mother-in-law's job. And I thought, you know, that's so different than it is in this country, because in America, some people live intergenerationally, but most don't. And when I work all day, and if we're going to eat, it's either you or I who's going to cook, and we both
You're being way too nice there.
Yeah, it's me.
Usually you.
Yeah, it's me. But we both do the laundry, and we both do some share.
You're being
cleaning.
Way too greedy there.
We both do laundry.
I do a little more than you do.
Okay, but I still do laundry.
You do a little.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My point is, it's just a different system set up where, you know, the family, she helps them with their childcare, and presumably when she's older, they'll help her. They'll all live together, and I just think that's very different than here in America, and that was a support that she had that I could use. Not that I don't love your mother, but I don't know that it would work for us to all live together. But I thought it was interesting, very big change with how we live here.
I like having visitors. Yeah, I like visitors.
Visitors are good, but they don't cook and clean and do our laundry. Yeah. The other thing that was really interesting to me, she teaches in high school, and she told me that the kids who are like 16 to 18 years old, they go to school from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. at night. They have a short break for lunch. And the reason for this is that they have a high stakes test in order to get into college. Not everyone gets in. And so you have to get a certain level on this test. School is 6 days a week. I think it was like, you know, 10 and a half months a year. So this woman works 6 days a week till 10 p.m. They go to school till 10 p.m. So then basically everything else is sacrificed. They have no after school activities, no sports, no music, no family time, anything. So I asked her, what do they do on Sundays? That's the one day off. She said nothing. They're exhausted, all of them. They just sit around the house and relax and try and recoup for the next day.
This is a ignorant statement because I didn't really talk to her, but it just sounds like a terrible way to live. Like, I get it. People always say, oh, America's falling behind and we're not up to the academic standards. And that's certainly true in a lot of cases.
I'm sure.
But I do think there's a great, great, great value in enjoying your life. And maybe you can be convinced you're enjoying your life by going to school, you know, 10 hours a day and 6 days a week. But I'd rather have my kids a little less educated academically and a little more time in the swimming pool, running around, even watching TV and playing video games and being kids than sort of slaves to a system.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that being more well-rounded, whether it's self-directed or parent-directed, quite honestly, I think still makes you a more interesting, more well-rounded adult. I think you're more likely to find your passion instead of like slaving away at a job, you know, just because you scored high on a certain test. So anyway, it was nice talking to this lady.
I love how you gave her a cookie. You gave her a cookie. You gave her black
cookie.
And white from New York. We live in this land with crappy cookies, and you gave her the black and white cookie. And I believe in international relations. I believe in diplomacy, but I wanted that friggin' cookie.
Okay, I want to say that is the black and white cookie from Lulu Bakery in Scarsdale, New York. That is the best black and white cookie in America. The woman didn't know what it was. She kept asking me what it was called, and I offered to her at first, and she said no because she thought it was too beautiful to eat. But I convinced her it was the best cookie ever, and she ate it. And she
How do you say in Mandarin, crazy short woman on airplane gave me cookie?
Well, the lady gobbled it up, and I was sitting, and she didn't know I was short.
Fair enough.
All right. What do you got in the news?
All right, so news story this week, very interesting. Cedar Park, Texas. These things often happen in Texas, I got to say. A Cedar Park high school student was arrested Monday after he allegedly brought weapons to campus. The school sent home a note to parents, notified that school officials, this kid was in possession of a weapon, and they tracked down the student. And it turns out what's interesting here is he brought several knives and a cap gun onto campus. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking back to my days on the mean streets of Mailpack, New York, which of course isn't mean at all. And cap guns are not that uncommon of a thing to bring in your bag. Cap gun, just a cap gun. And knives were not that uncommon. It was a pretty rural area, but it wasn't that uncommon to have a Swiss Army knife or even a bigger knife in your locker. And I was thinking, despite that as my background and despite that being kind of a normal thing, I totally get this. And we do live, you know, Brian Johnson, a guest from our first episode touched on this, second episode. We live in a different time now. We do. And people unfortunately have to be hypervigilant. And a kid bringing a cap gun and a bunch of knives to school is not in 2016 what it was in 1986. And that's a big bummer.
I don't know. To me, yes, there's more school violence than there was when we were growing up. No doubt about it. But I don't know that the answer are these restrictive policies. Not that I'm against keeping weapons out of school, but metal detectors and armed guards and guards at the front door, it really changes the tone of the school. And I firmly believe if somebody wants to get a weapon in, they will, as has been proved so many times, that people with weapons have gotten through security. And I just think we should be really focusing more on empathy, interpersonal relations, mental health counseling, more social workers in schools to deal with some of the issues that bring about violence and worry less about the cap guns.
I've kind of changed on this a little bit. I've evolved. I don't have a problem with an armed guard in some weird way. I'm not thrilled by it, but I feel like both sides need to give in a little bit.
You really want to walk our kids into elementary school with a guy and a machine gun waiting?
No, I'm not saying a machine gun, but I don't mind a police officer in a school. I don't. I'm not thrilled by the idea. It's not my first choice. I certainly don't think it's the answer. But I feel like both sides have to be willing to give in a little here. And you have.
I wonder how much more likely that police officer's gun would be used in some other manner than by the police officer.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm not saying I'm thrilled by it. It's not my first choice. I'm saying both sides sometimes have to give in. And I feel like on the left, I'm very left, obviously. We're always calling for this and calling for that. And I feel like this is one area where I would be willing to bend a little bit is, okay, police officer in a school. Now, who's going to afford it? The budgets, blah, blah, blah. It's not realistic. But if that's a starting point to talk about sort of some of the things that need to be done, I could take that step.
Well, again, to me, it's missing the point of the issue and just throwing money at, you know, guards and security instead of dealing with the real problems.
Tell me, is Rodney Wolford a real problem?
Rodney Wolford is a big problem. So in the news this week, Rodney Wolford was a popular youth sports coach on the Chicago's Northwest Side. He was recently found guilty of molesting neighborhood teenage girls. So what's interesting to me about the story is Wolford claimed that he was an Olympic athlete in bobsledding, but the IOC reported that they had no record of him as an Olympian, and he's not listed as a participant for any of the countries he claimed he played for. And in 1995, Wolford pleaded guilty to fondling an 11-year-old girl and her 13-year-old sister in their home. He was sentenced to 8 months work release, which is horrendous, and was forced to register on the sex offender website. But this is something I didn't know. That registry, he only had to stay registered as a sex offender for 10 years, which has expired. So after it expired, he became a very well-known coach in this area, and then continued to molest neighborhood girls. So a couple of thoughts on this. One is, you know, kids are vulnerable just by the nature of their age, and some kids are more vulnerable than others. And youth sports organizations need to be more vigilant about screening. I mean, nice guys who appear to be very friendly and outgoing and everybody, you know, cares for everyone can also still be molesters, which is often the case. And sex offenders have a very high recidivism rate, right? They're known to continue to offend. And that's even considering that many sexual offenses never get reported. So the listing on the registry for me should be more permanent. And also an interesting thing is that he lied about the Olympics, right? He lied about being in the Olympics. And much like our son's coach who lied about where he played college.
Pride of Utah State.
Yeah. So is lying such a big deal? Like, is one lie about your credentials meaning that that's a big red flag, or is that just a boastful ego and it doesn't mean anything?
See, I actually think it's funny. We never ended up, you know, we talked about this first episode. Our son played flag football this year. The coach, it turns out, lied about playing college football. We never called him on it. We just laughed about it behind his back a little bit. But I do think it's a red flag. I think it at least is worth looking into because it suggests, you know, it's kind of like when your kid lies, it's usually not just one lie, you know, and when people lie, it's usually not just one lie. And So here's this guy. He's an Olympian. Well, that's easy to find. That takes 2 seconds to Google. Utah State took me 5 minutes to find out that he did not play college football. And I just think you never know what else they're lying about and what else they're hiding. And I think parents who don't Google their kids' coaches, I always Google my kids' coaches, always. I do. I don't even always tell you about it, but I always Google them because I want to know who these people are. I want to know what they believe in. I want to know how they feel. I want to know political leanings, blah, blah, whatever. I kind of want to know as much as I can about who is talking to my son for 2 days a week, 2 hours at a pop. And it's not very hard to find these days. So this Olympic guy, this fraud, it wouldn't have been very hard for someone to Google him, but most people, I would say 90% of parents probably never Google their sports coaches. They just, okay.
Yeah, that's true. But also you think about, you know, your typical youth sports league, you know, it's some guy or woman organizing, they're doing the best that they can. They do the background checks, but
of course,
you know,
that's why I think parents should Google, like you always want to look up the people. Cause yeah, I agree with you. That guy like, hey, Big Ray, fun Big Ray is coaching our kids this year.
Yeah.
Well, who the hell knows about Big? You don't know who Big Ray is. So I'm with you.
Well, in this case, Big Ray, also known as Rodney Wilford, was molesting the kids.
Up next, we have our million-dollar interview this week. And I was just thinking, or you would have to agree, I have one of the most funky, cool Rolodexes of all time. Would you not?
I would.
It's weird. It's like bizarre. It started years ago when I got Emmanuel Lewis's phone number. And a couple of weeks ago, I won't say who I traded to, Jerry West's information for Sir Mix-a-Lot. So that's pretty sweet. So I have a lot of numbers. And our guest this week is Shelley Wright, country music star, former Nashville resident, now lives in New York City, and openly gay, which is very rare in the country music industry. And she joins us to talk about her life and raising kids with her partner, Lauren.
Yeah, but first, I'd like to talk to you about my Tower Garden by Juice Plus.
You still have one?
I still have it. And for those who haven't heard, the Tower Garden is a vertical aeroponic garden. Do you remember what aeroponic means?
It involves air and ponics.
Yeah. So my garden grows in only water, no dirt. It's all the joy of gardening without any of the hassle. It uses recycled water. It takes up very little room. It has a pleasant waterfall sound, and my vegetables are, yeah, that doesn't sound like a pleasant waterfall sound. And my vegetables are growing faster than they would in the ground. If you want to learn more about the amazing Tower Garden, contact Lisa Blaisdell by checking out her Tower Garden website at lisablaisdell.towergarden.com. And don't forget to mention the sports parent to receive 5 free seedlings with your order of a Tower Garden.
Our special guest this week is, I always find this interesting. It's a woman I've come to know largely via Twitter DM. Shelley Wright is a, you know, longtime country music star. Songs include Shut Up and Drive, Single White Female, sold millions of albums. Her next album, I Am the Rain, will be coming out later this year. And Shelley, I would say, you know, I'm a guy who worked in the country music business as a writer briefly. She is unique in the world because she is openly gay, which it's not the only reason you're unique, but definitely makes you unique in that sort of world. She and her wife, Lauren, have 2 sons, George and Everett. They live in New York City. And Shelley, we have a topic we talk about a lot in this show, and I just have to ask you about it because it's very important. Who's better, Hall & Oates or Elton John?
Ooh, you know, interesting. Lauren and I just discussed Hall & Oates the other day. I think they're often, I wish I could have a short answer for you, but when you talk about Hall & Oates, often people laugh because it, you know, because of the videos, the 80s hair, the 80s.
Man-eater. Yeah. Man-eater was a bad moment.
They were, well, we all have them. They're brilliant songwriters. And when you really pull those songs apart and really kind of dissect them, they're genius, as is Elton. So I won't be choosing a favorite today.
She passes.
You're passing. I knew you were going to pass. I totally respect that, though. So you know, we just watched a few minutes ago when you appeared on Ellen. And you've had a very sort of public, and I find it inspiring. You would agree with that, would you not?
I would.
Sort of public coming out, which can't be easy over the years. And you said you've touched on that. You feel like it definitely hurt your music career. And I always wonder, like, it seems like people are very accepting openly. You know, like people are like, yay, that's so great. Congratulations on being courageous. And then sales plummet and interest isn't the same. And I wonder, do you look at people differently since coming out? And do you trust people at their sort of face value when they say, I'm so proud of you and that was really courageous? Or do you think it's kind of at sometimes something people just feel the need to say?
Well, do you mean, when you say that people congratulated me, do you mean my peers and my industry?
I would say both. I guess because I'm sure you got a lot of, you know, a lot of support from people saying that was great and that was amazing, but also in the industry, where I'm sure did people not congratulate you in the industry? Is that a misread right there?
Yeah. I think if you were to go back and kind of pore over what was happening at that time, you would see that I did receive some very private personal phone calls and texts and emails from my contemporaries in country music. But I, as my pal Rodney Crowell predicted, he said, I think it's going to get chilly and cold and quiet. And it did. Likewise, you won't find that many country music publications, they reported it, but there was no resounding congratulations are in order. What a courageous, brave thing to do. Which, by the way, was not the impetus for my deciding to come out the way I did, or at all. It wasn't to be congratulated by Nashville, the Music Row and country radio, because I suspected that it wouldn't happen that way. But I wanted to somehow cash in my public capital and try to start a dialogue in a forum where there really had never been a dialogue about, somebody being gay in country music. So
it seems like in the last few years, we've been hearing a lot about gay rights and lesbians and transgender issues. And it's kind of on a daily basis in the discussion. But I'm wondering now for you if it feels like we've come a long way, or does it feel like really there's still so much more that has to be done?
Well, there's always a long game and a short game, right? I mean, in any, even, I know I'm going to use a sports analogy because I know Jeff largely to be not just a great writer, but a sports guy. You know, when you think about rebuilding a franchise, for instance, there's the long game, and then there's you want to win a few games in the season. So you kind of have to pander to both visions. And that's kind of how I feel about the advocacy effort. There's no doubt that in 2016, we are talking on a daily basis. Every day on national news, there's a story that somehow touches upon LGBT issues. When I came out, I honestly can't recall that it was hardly ever mentioned. There were, I think, 5 states in which marriage equality was the law of that land, of those respective lands, when I came out. So now in 2016, you can get married anywhere. Not that Kim Davis isn't going to try to yank the license out of your hand in Kentucky,
right.
But I have to look at it both ways. I kind of have to Google map it in and Google map it out, and look at, yeah, we've made incredible strides. The Supreme Court has made a ruling that, will forever hopefully set a precedent that, our kids and grandkids will look back and not believe ever was even called for. That said, I still get hundreds of letters every day via email or whatever, even some hard copy mails still, where, there's a young kid in Utah that's writing to me right now that just got kicked out of his house. His parents found out that he's gay, and he's been excommunicated. He's 16. He's been excommunicated from his church, and his parents have kicked him out and told him to find another place to live. This is a straight A honor student, and this will undoubtedly derail his plans for his education. He doesn't know how, if he gets into a college, how he'll pay for it now, because they were his help. That's not even factoring in the emotional, spiritual damage his church and his community and his family have done on him. So whenever I get to a little too cocky, thinking, "Look at us! Look how great we're doing," I think about kids like that, and I also think about my neighborhood. I live on the Upper East Side. There are different places in our neighborhood where, if Lauren and I are holding hands and walking, pushing the boys in the stroller, we get looks. We've had people kind of look at us and kind of shake us off, like, "Don't, that's not cool with me, don't do that," or "I don't even," we had a lady the other day just wave her hand and say, "I don't even want to know," as if we were offering to explain something to her. And that, and we live in New York City, so So, you know, as you guys can see, I don't give short answers, and I apologize for that. Catherine, I think it's you know, there are two ways to look at it. We've made incredible strides. I wouldn't have believed in 2010 had you told me marriage equality would be the law of the land in 6 years. I wouldn't have believed it. But on the other hand, we certainly, you know, we certainly do have a long way to go, especially when these GOP candidates are, you know, whether they believe this stuff or not. It's certainly something really advantageous for them to hammer away on the stump about we're going to overturn marriage equality. And again, I don't believe half of them believe it, but they campaign on it because they know it fires up that base.
Gays and guns. You can't go
that's
wrong.
Right.
You can't go wrong feeding them gays and gay. And
that's exactly right. How do you
handle it, or do you handle it, or it doesn't matter? Let's say you're doing a show. And you know, I mean, you're again, country music, very conservative, very, very, very conservative. I'm sure you're dealing with people who you know for a fact do not agree with your lifestyle, who find it repugnant, find it repulsive, just think it is sinful and immoral. Can you still have a solid working relationship, human relationship with these people? Or do you feel like you have had to shun people from your life, shed people from your life?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. I can have a healthy relationship of reciprocity and respect with anyone. I really can. It's not a problem for me. I have a lot of typically fans who are disgusted by me. They don't show up to my shows anymore. So that's a good thing. But I do have, for whatever reason, good handful of fans who continue to engage me in social media. They still follow me on Facebook and on Twitter, and I wonder why they do if I'm, you know, so disgusting to them. But they say things to me, and sometimes I respond and sometimes I don't. I try to never get down in the dirt the way they do, but I pride myself on being a little bit quick-witted. And trying to keep it classy. I always keep in mind, you know, I gauge my behavior in my life, not just in this regard with someone who may not approve of who I am as a gay woman, and a gay Christian at that. That really gets them going. they don't like that at all. But I try to gauge my behaviors in all realms of my life by consulting the 90-year-old me. And what I mean by that is, when I'm 90 years old, I ask that, I imagine what that lady will be like and where she'll be, and hopefully she's got a nice rocking chair. And I ask her to evaluate my decisions, whether it be how I'm dealing with an adversarial business transaction, or just meeting someone on the street, or holding the door for someone who doesn't say thank you. I ask that 90-year-old me how to behave and what to say, if there is anything to say. And often I get really wise sage counsel from that 9-year-old gal to smile and keep on a trucking.
That's good. You That's know? Actually really
that
good.
That 90-year-old gal should know that Hall & Oates are better than Elton John.
Oh,
I'm just
please.
Saying.
Hey, you know, sometimes wisdom is sometimes time release. I may get back to you in 10 years and go, you know what, you guys? I've made a determination.
Exactly.
They're better than Elton.
Yeah.
What? So, Shelley, one thing I think a lot about is how when we have young children, we talk to them in fantasy ways about when they get married, when they have kids and things like that. There's a show I watch on TV about talented kids, and the host is constantly asking the boys, do you have any girlfriends in school? And I really think a lot about this with my own kids. I had a doctor, you know, tell my son once, oh, this problem will be gone by the time you meet a nice woman. And I was thinking, and I actually said it out loud to him. I said, you might meet a nice woman and get married. And then there was a pause, and I'm like, or a man. Because it was important for me to let him know that either way, I'm good. So I'm wondering, I know you've talked about how your dad wasn't on board at first, but now he is, and you have your own kids. How do you think parents should handle that quandary? How do you talk about it with your kids in a way that lets them know that you're cool either way, without it being awkward?
Right. Well, first of all, I want you two to be my new best friends, because
We're
I
in.
Love your philosophies.
We're in.
And for, you know, it... I think for now, like in 2016, we're going to have decisions about age-appropriate discussions. But I think if we collectively, as a an empathetic, compassionate, intelligent community, in a few years, we won't even have to think about that, because gays and lesbians and people who have same-sex parent, this is all going to hopefully be more a part of a normal fabric of American family. And we won't have to say, honey, at what age should we have a discussion with them that's okay? Hopefully, you know, that will be evidenced by our communities. But for now, you're right. That does have to be a discussion. And you know, Lauren and I talk about our boys, and they've got a little friend named Charlotte, who's their best friend. And Lauren said something about one of these boys is going to take Charlotte to prom. And I said, yeah, that's true. But one of them might want to take Jack or Nate to prom. And she was like, oh, yeah, we really have to think about that. Because as gay women, we still have that default setting, right, of like boy and girl. And I think it's just because that's the world in which we were reared, and that's what we hear. So hopefully in a few years, I don't know if it's 5 years or if it's still 25 years away. God, I hope it's not. But they will see that in their schools. They will see that in their houses of worship. Kids won't have, they'll know that, of course my mom won't care if I date a guy, or of course my dad will be fine if I bring home a girl. Like, because my dad has lesbian friends. And but it's going to take some time, because people honestly are really still kind of crawling out of the shadows. And there are still a lot of people who don't have the courage yet, or the ability to crawl out of the shadows. I can already tell by talking to you guys and by following your husband on social media, I can tell you guys give a great deal of thought to what it must be like to be other people. And that's the key. That sets the whole thing in motion. But sad as it is, there are a whole big chunk of Americans who don't give a lot of thought about what it must be like to be someone else. And therein lies our big, huge, gross, ugly, hairy stumbling block as a society, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Very, very well said. All right, Shelley, it's that exciting time of the show where we hit you with five rapid-fire questions. Are you ready?
I'm so nervous.
All right, this is a tough one. I'm going to start with number one. You get approached by Death Row Records. They want you to do a country album of all Snoop Dogg covers. Are you in?
Sure.
Do you have a favorite Snoop Dogg song, by the way?
I know Snoop Dogg from his being on The L Word. I can't honestly tell you I know Snoop Dogg songs, but I've read at great length about him, great Rolling Stone articles. What an artist. I can't say I've ever, I'm sure if I heard something and you told me it was Snoop Dogg, I'd say, oh, yeah, I actually know that one, but I can't cite one for you.
But I like your adventurous attitude. You do it anyway, and that's,
you do it anyway.
That's cool.
That's what
counts.
I would, based on this fact, that what I've read about him, I know him to be a consummate artist and a very prolific creator, and I don't care what medium you're working in. If you're that abiding to your art, I like you. And I hear he's a workaholic, which kind of, I like that too.
And he and Cameron Diaz went to the same high school.
Oh,
all right,
cool.
Question number two. Slurpee or slushy?
Icy. What's the difference? Am I on one? Icy.
Oh, yeah. Icy is actually a different drink.
Is it icy like a slushy?
It's more like a slushy than a slurpee.
Okay, I win.
It's a 7-Eleven thing.
That's a slurpee. That's a slurpee.
Right. Okay.
Shelly, good.
No, it's an icy. Icee.
Yeah, no, you know, that's like a slushy. Yeah, all right, we'll buy that. All right, who wins in a fight right now, 12-round boxing match, you, Martina McBride?
Oh, me.
You feel confident?
Yes.
Well, she's small. She's really petite. She's really, I mean, I have the law of tonnage and leverage on my side. I'm 5'8".
And you're a New Yorker really... now.
So... Oh, yeah, you're a New Yorker now. So you wouldn't take any crap from her.
Right? Exactly. They're right. That's my leg up. That's my leg up.
Mm-hmm. Give me the worst venue you've ever played in your life.
Oh, gosh. Well, I played one where nobody showed up in Greeley, Colorado.
What year was that?
It was before I had a record deal. I had a band called County Line, and we toured all over. And we had a crappy bus, and we weren't very good. But usually scores of people would show up to our shows, and no one showed up. So I'm guessing it was 1992.
Did you say, 19... did you lean into the mic and say, "Hello, Cleveland"?
Didn't even know. I'd never seen that film, so didn't know. We didn't have cable. I didn't get cable in my entire lifetime until I was like 25 years old. I'd never seen, I mean, I went to Susan Sainer's house and watched MTV, but that's all I, Susan, by the way, who is still one of my very best friends.
Right.
So 92, it wasn't so much that the venue was bad, but I have a Pavlovian response when I think about that venue.
I can understand.
Because no one came.
That's okay. Yeah. I've had book signings the same way. Last question. What is your, what's your go-to post-gig snack?
Pop-Tart.
Oh.
What flavor?
Brown sugar cinnamon.
No!
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. She likes Hall & Oates and brown sugar flavored cinnamon. Nice job.
Hey, but I love Elton, though, too. I really... let me get back with you guys in about a decade. I'll ruminate.
Okay, and I want you to know that you're welcome in Southern California to record or just to come sing in the Closet Studio anytime.
Yeah, anytime.
We actually redecorated. We put a chair in this time and rather than us sitting on the floor. Yeah, mm-hmm. So yeah, you're welcome.
What are the dimensions?
It's about 8 by 6, 6 by 8.
Oh, not even. I'd say 4 by 6.
It's very small.
So we're talking guitar, like small guitar.
Yeah, 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 small guitar.
Acoustic.
Yeah,
guitar.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Next time I come out, I'll give you guys the heads up. And
all right.
I'll head your way.
Awesome.
Well, Shelley Wright, you can follow her on Twitter at Shelley Wright. And Shelley, seriously, thank you so much for coming out to the Sports Pair today. We greatly appreciate it.
Hope you find a parking space.
Thank you. I'm in one. I hope to be a regular on your show. I just love what you guys are doing.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Shelley.
All right. So, Shelley Wright, interesting, fascinating, unique, first non-sports guest here. And one thing I got to say real quick is when I was a writer in Nashville, I started my career as a writer in Nashville, and there was a singer who was gay, and everyone knew he was gay. And he used to lie about being gay all the time, and everyone knew it. And I think what Shelley Wright has done just by coming out as a gay country singer took huge guts. So to me, it was really kind of cool having her today.
I agree. I think it does take guts. And we kind of like blow it off as like, oh, another person came out. But I think especially in country music, I think that is a really tough deal. And I don't think it's an accident that she lives in New York now and not Nashville.
Yeah, I think to be an accepting town is pretty good. Although Nashville is pretty progressive, but you know, my former hometown. Anyway, Catherine, it's time for our 1 minute wrap up debate. And this is a good one. You're going to go first today. It's two of the great shows of the 1980s, two real powerhouses, Different Strokes, probably the best show ever, versus Facts of Life, which kind of sucked. You're going to go first. You're going to defend Facts of Life?
Yep.
Tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Ready, set, go.
Now, I'm a fan of both shows. Different Strokes is great, but the problem is that it had a lot of stereotypes, and there's also something I find uncomfortable in this modern day and age is this white rich family adopting these two down and out black boys. But the Facts of Life, on the other hand, was very inclusive. It had people who were rich and poor, white and black, able and disabled. And it had a older woman who was the matriarch and she was lovely. There was roller skating and they had fights, but they also got along. It was like real life.
That was pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say real life.
No, it really wasn't.
Okay. When you're ready.
Can I have your phone?
Yeah.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Good set, go.
Yes, Different Strokes was a little sort of awkward in that regard. But Phil Drummond was a badass. That guy took in those two kids after his maid died. He was a really good guy. First of all, Willis dated Janet Jackson. Let's just get that in our head. Nancy Reagan was a guest. Mr. T was a guest. And then the biggest star of all, Gary Coleman, who, yes, he was small, which I would think you would relate to. But his biggest thing was he was a super duper star. What you talking about, Willis, was the phrase that captured the 1970s and 80s. And that show was awesome.
Beep.
I think I won that.
I don't think so. But okay, so tell us who won our debate. Tweet us at The Family Coach or at Jeff Perlman. Use the hashtag TheSportsParent so we can see your comments. Find us on Facebook at Jeff Perlman and Catherine at The Family Coach. And we'll put links and information about the topics we discuss on our show on our website, thesportsparentpodcast.com. Jeff's website is jeffperlman.com. And you can check out his amazing blog and take a look at his quaz, which is Jeff's Q&A series.
And check out Catherine's website at thefamilycoach.com. We'd like to thank you all for listening. And please don't forget to subscribe to The Sports Parent on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. And if you like our show, please, 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 please say it one time.
Please.
Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a review if you can. Here's how you do it. It's quite easy. You search iTunes for The Sports Parent. You click on the podcast, not the individual episode. When it comes up, you should see details next to the logo. Next to details, it should say reviews and ratings. Click that heading, then add a comment and or just give us a 5-star rating if you feel comfortable. Also, if you had topics you'd like us to discuss in the show, and we will discuss them. If you send them in, we will discuss them. Send us an email to Catherine at Catherine with a C at thefamilycoach.com. Audio production assistance from the great Andrew Perella. Music by the legendary MC White Owl and Static Selecta. And until next week's episode of The Sports Parent, win or lose, take your kids for ice cream after the game.